You're listening to the Rubber Chickens Unleashed.
9:55 to go in the first quarter, no score. Connor Shaw with the wide side of the field to his right. Sean Carson in the backfield, but he wants to throw it. Under some pressure. Shaw throwing late, got a man at the 10, caught, turning, diving. Touchdown, Carolina. Touchdown, Connor Shaw. From 35 yards out to Shaq Rowland. Shaw's 20th touchdown of the season. Oh, what a throw on the run. Demir Bird comes in motion again. Cooper going to fake to him, this time going right side. Cooper all alone. Cooper opens it up at the 50, the 40. Striding at the 20. Nobody going to get him at the 5. Touchdown, Carolina. Touchdown, Pharaoh Cooper. 71 yards. That's why you put him in the Wildcat.
Hello, Gamecock Nation, and welcome to TRC Unleashed. This is episode number 59. I am Buck, and I am joined by T-Bone and the G-Man. Our writings can be found at therubberchickensblog.com and are forged from deep in the recesses of our imagination.
Hold up. What are you doing?
What? No good?
I just don't understand it.
Well, I've been listening to some of Demetra's scene setters. y'all ever listen to the scene setters that he does?
Not if I can help it.
No. I mean, they do the scene setters, and they've got, you know, the guy with the real deep dramatic voice. And I kind of thought, you know, just thought we'd try a little something different. And, you know, was that not working for you?
I'm not in the desert, but a sandstorm is brewing or something like that.
Okay, everybody who's listening to this podcast, let me just stop for a second. And, you know, I'm all about respecting people's opinions. Now, when you're in the stadium and that video comes on and the dramatic video or the dramatic music comes on, that all really works, you know, as it leads into, you know, it's time for Carolina football. And then, you know, and then you get the music and the visuals. That script is the worst thing ever.
If only we knew who wrote that script.
Gosh. And
but wait, we do know.
Demetra is so proud of that. I am forged from concrete and steel. I am not a desert, but a sandstorm builds within me. Oh, jeez. And I'm thinking, you know, the whole John Facenda voiceover guy thing is like 1970s. You know, if they had any stones at all, they would have got a really good woman voiceover to do that. You know, why is is what now? T-Bone is breaking up again. G-Man, you have any idea what T-Bone's trying to say?
He's trying to do the Pam Ward voice.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
It's time for Carolina football. I'm Pam Ward. I am forged from concrete and steel.
The Gamecocks are playing the Chippewas.
The Gamecocks are taking on the Chippewas of Eastern Michigan. No, Central Michigan.
Right, it's the Chippewas or Central Michigan. But what you see there is, I think, what he imagines pillow talk to be. I am forged from
God. I am wearing Joe Boxer underwear. Anyway, where were we? Anyway, this is TRC Unleashed. It's episode number 59. And as I stated earlier, I'm Buck. T-Bone and G-Man are here. Thanks for joining us. It is Clemson week. And in just a few minutes, we're going to let you listen to an interview we did with former Gamecock Jonathan Martin. I tell you, you think about it, Jonathan Martin was there through that whole thing. You know, I mean, he was in school in 98, and he was injured in 98 and 99. But he was there for 0-21, and he was there for the turnaround, the two Outback Bowl wins. So he saw a lot of stuff. So
he also, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was there the following year, the 5-7 year.
Yeah, he alluded to that. He basically said, yeah, everything went wrong that year. I don't want to talk about it.
So, yeah, he saw the lows, the highs, the lows. He went huge cycle of Gamecock sports.
Right, right. And I didn't realize, and you'll hear it in the interview, that he coached on, or he was a GA at Kentucky. I didn't know that either. But we learn all kind of things on TRC Unleashed, okay? So let's talk a little bit before we get to the Clemson preview. Coastal Carolina. We beat the Chanticleers. I think I heard somebody pronounce it Shants. 70-10, and was probably, would you guys say, about the most relaxing South Carolina game in any recent memory.
That was a scrimmage.
Yeah, I mean, we could, if we'd have kept our starters in for four quarters, we could have scored 100 points. Don't you think?
If there had been enough time, that would have been the only issue.
Yeah. So, yeah, easy win. All kind of guys got in the game, got to play. You know, T-Bone, did anything stick out to you about the game besides winning by 60 points?
Well, I'm not the most authoritative voice on these matters in the best of times. But in this case, I had taken my family to see the early 11 o'clock showing of Catching Fire, starring Jennifer Lawrence. And so we didn't get out until about halfway through the first quarter, and I listened to most of the game on the ride home from the big Greenville. Listening to the game on the radio, I do not recommend anyone do that.
Because it's
not conducive. It's not conducive to actually understanding anything that's happening. But fortunately, it was clear from the people, the names he was calling, that we were way ahead. No tension.
So, yeah, I had a similar experience because the on ESPN3, the play-by-play was actually the radio feed. And I'm sure just listening to the game is really confusing, but watching the game and listening to what Todd is saying, and the Jamari Smith touchdown was one of the worst things I've ever heard. I mean, Jamari Smith was tossing the football to the referee and about to be congratulated by teammates, and Todd was going, somebody's in motion. There's a handoff up the middle, and I thought it was, well, maybe there's a delay or something, and then there was no delay. He just had no idea what was going on that particular play, and we love Todd.
We love because
we can't stand Demetra so bad, and Demetra technically knows how to call a game pretty well. I guess we just don't like him personally. I guess is more it, but. Yeah, but Todd's a good guy. We like Todd.
He's ours. He's our Todd. He can be horrible at his job, but he's still ours.
Yeah.
I don't know who Demetra belongs to.
Purdue, I think. Somebody in the middle. He went to the Purdue Boilermakers.
Right. Somebody that Pam Ward would call again.
He dated Pam Ward when he was in college. G-Man, any major takeaways from the game for you?
You know, really, no. It was just sort of a walk in the park from the very beginning. I was impressed that we put 28 points on the board in the first quarter with seemingly no effort. I love the way that Dylan came in the game. He dropped back on his first pass, throws an absolute strike to Nick Jones in the back of the end zone. And you're just like, ho-hum, you know? I mean, that was just...
Yeah, he looked sharp. Thompson looked really sharp.
He looked sharp. And the way that Connor was getting out of the pocket and running, it seemed like he had his quickness back to me.
Right.
And now, granted, you know, their defense was not nearly as fast as the Florida defense, but it appeared that he was running with his normal gait and his speed, and that encouraged me for Saturday because you know he's going to need to have that. So I thought the quarterbacks both looked very polished and on their game.
Yeah, yeah. It was good to say. And that was Shaw. I've tried to think about how to phrase this, not to piss G-Man off. So Shaw got his 25th win as the starting quarterback for the Gamecock football team.
He started the 25th game in which the entire team combined game that he started.
Right.
To, at the end of the game, win it.
So he is now the winningest quarterback for quarterbacks who started games in which the team won. Right.
I got a question for you.
Yeah, lay it on me.
Who do you think the winningest center is in the history of Gamecock football?
Man, the winning – I couldn't name three centers in the history.
It's got to be T.J. Johnson.
Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. You know, I think I think these guys need some credit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to say I bet you it was T.J. Johnson.
Who do you think the winningest kicker is in the winningest place kicker?
It's not Patrick Fish.
You know, by the time his career's over, Tyler Hull could be the winningest punter of all time. Because he's – isn't he just a sophomore? I mean, he punted last year.
He could be.
So let's do Rubber Chicken Awards brought to you by Blitz Jewelry. I'm sure
– by the fine people at Blitz Jewelry.
I'm sure people have tuned in to hear about the South Carolina-Clemson game on Saturday, and we've just babbled on about nothing, basically. G-Man, who is your Blitz Jewelry Rubber Chicken Award going to this week?
I'm going to give it to the backup running backs.
Ooh.
All of them?
I like it.
Okay.
I thought that Smith came in and ran very well, showed a burst. And I really liked the way Brandon Wilds looked when he got the ball in his hands. It made me encouraged for Saturday and the future. The guy just ran like I don't know, like he had missed a beat, and I love his running style. Low to the ground, kind of bounces off people. I really enjoyed watching him run. And Sean Carson got in the end zone for what I think was his first touchdown.
It was indeed his first career touchdown. Actually, Jamari Smith got his first career touchdown before Sean Carson got his. So, but they both got touchdowns, which is what counts.
And right before Sean got his touchdown, they put Nosovich in, and then they ran Sean in. And I know that they sent him in there to get him a touchdown, okay?
Right.
And the first play, Nosovich does the old zone read and keeps the ball.
Right.
And he's already scored on the season.
Right, yeah.
And so I'm thinking the coaches are over there going, what are you doing? Get the ball to Sean. So anyway.
Come on, son. We're trying to get Sean a touchdown. Gosh dang it.
So you got one.
T-Bone, who you got?
You know, I was thinking about this, and you look at a player who has done well so far this year in limited duty, but on Saturday got both a touchdown reception and a rushing touchdown, and that would be Pharaoh Osiris Ramsey's Randall Cobb Cornelius Cooper.
Yes, and good call. The Randall Cobb part is very important. There, because as I alluded to in my snap judgments, he reminds me so much of Randall Cobb, just with what he's able to do. He can run with the football, he can catch the football. I think he could throw the football if we needed him to.
Runs out of
the Wildcat. So be interesting to see how much of a part of the game plan he is on Saturday. I bet Spurrier is going to give him at least a handful of plays out of the Wildcat Saturday night.
You think he's got a Stephon Gilmore series in him?
Yeah, I'm sure of it. So I'm going to give my Blitz Jewelry Rubber Chicken Award to, I lost his name now. Devin Potter. I'm giving it to Devin Potter. He was the last of the running backs that G-Man mentioned just a minute ago to come into the game. He got a few carries on the last series of the game. Devin is a 5'10", 200-pound freshman from Granite Falls, North Carolina. Played at South Caldwell under Roy Hazelton.
Coach Hazelton, yeah.
Yeah, I just made that part up. But sounds like a football coach, doesn't it? Roy Hazelton. Roy Hazelton, how you doing?
Anyway. I'm built from concrete and steel.
All right, that's enough of that crap. Let's go to our interview with former Gamecock Jonathan Martin.
Hey
South Carolina and Clemson square off this weekend, and we're glad to have on the podcast someone who is very familiar with the rivalry. He was a standout defender for USC in the late 90s and early 2000s, and still holds the record for tackles in a season with 93 in 2002. We welcome former Gamecock Jonathan Martin to the podcast. Jonathan, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, I'm doing great. Doing great. How you guys doing?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for joining us. So let's get started before we get into the game this weekend and talk a little bit about your career. You had an interesting career during an interesting time in the Gamecock program. Let's see, you came to USC in 98. You were a standout running back at Richland Northeast. Had to overcome some injuries your first couple of years, and then settled in at the spur position under Lou Holtz. But I'm assuming you were recruited to the Gamecocks by Brad Scott. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So
that's definitely right.
So how did you feel when Scott was let go, and then you knew you would be playing for the legend Lou Holtz?
Well, I felt great. You know, growing up, nice to tell people this, growing up, I used to watch TV Notre Dame and Rocket Ishmael, Ricky Waters. You know, Rocket was definitely my favorite player ever, Tony Rice. So I watched him in the glory years, and, you know, Coach Holtz, the guy, and camera was always on him, and his, and his coaching antics, and how fiery he was as a coach. So I was already drawn to him. I was already drawn to him and for the work he did at Notre Dame. And, when the firing happened, you know, I just randomly mentioned to somebody, I mean, it'd be great, you know, if Lou Holtz came here. And, but little did we know that it was actually about to happen. So when it happened, when we first got word of it, we were like, no way, that's not happening.
Yeah.
And then like a few days later, man, he's walking in our meeting room, and he did a little paper trick. He tears the paper open and he folds it up, and he magically comes back together. He did that for us, and he went out there and we sat out in front of the fans, and they introduced introduced Lou Holtz as next head football coach for the University of South Carolina. So it was all good for me, man.
Yeah, I hear you. And people, you know, old guys like us, and we're older than you are, Jonathan, we remember the excitement that was surrounding the program when Holtz came, and it was very similar to when Steve Spurrier came to South Carolina.
Yep.
I mean, it was a mm-hmm. big deal, and there was a lot of excitement. Now, that there wasn't a lot of excitement that first year when you guys went 0-11, and we remember that well. But just one of the great turnarounds, not just in South Carolina history, but in college football history, to come back the following year and go to a bowl game and win a bowl game. Mm-hmm. Tell us, how did you guys do that? I mean, what were the factors that led to going from zero wins one year to such a great season the next?
Well, I would say the first thing we did, we worked our tails off. For us, we had guys like Zola Davis and Anthony Wright, who worked their butts off during the summer that I first, got on board with USC. I started working out with a team that summer just right here in town. And I go work out in the morning and then go work at UPS in the evening. But I got a chance to be around, legends like Anthony Wright and Zola Davis, Andre Off, and guys like that who already been there two or three years, and they had already got to know each other, and they already had a system of how they did things. And I mean, they worked, man. These guys didn't really go home, during off season. I mean, there really wasn't an off season for those guys. And so in their preparation for the league, of course, I'm still here in town. You know, we got like a month off. We weren't going to a bowl game. So all we did was just me, Kalimba Edwards, Zola, Anthony, and a bunch of the guys that are training for the league, and Marco Hutchinson, a bunch of guys who really didn't have, a life, I guess, outside of football. So
right.
We
right.
hung around and we just worked our butts off, and we worked out, what these guys are going to the NFL or getting ready to go to the NFL, and we saw how things should be done. And so that laid a groundwork for the next summer, for the next few summers and off seasons. And of course, we come out and I think we had the wrong system on offense and defense. I think we ended up being number 13 in the nation, but offensively we just didn't have the right system. We didn't have the right guy playing the right positions, and I think they realized that what they wanted to run and what, you know, worked in Notre Dame was not going to work in the SEC, and all the speed and the athleticism that we had to make a switch, and we did that the next spring. And but once again, our work ethic came in, and we had a lot more guys stay, a lot more in the class, and rising seniors stayed during the holidays, stayed up here, you know, went home, you know, around Christmas and New Year before, you know, for like 3 weeks, you know, after the season, 3 or 4 weeks after the season, where it's just not much going on. You got exams, and I remember a lot more guys stayed around till like the week, a couple of days before Christmas, and we just worked our tails off. So we had a great spring ball, and we had, you know, we implemented and put in a new offense, put in a new defense. That spring, I believe, on 11, that's the year I tore my ACL. So I'm coming off of 2 seasons, not really playing a whole lot. So, yeah, you can either stay at running back, you know, with Brewer, Pinnock, and Derek Watson. And also you had Trevin Smith, Corey Alexander. Maybe we had about 9 guys. Along right. with the 4 guys that came in with me, there were like, you know, 5 more guys that we had to contend with. So they were like, hey, you can stay here on offense, or you can go to defense and play right now. So I made switch, but brought in the new defense that we got from Mississippi State. You know, they had those dogs. You know, they missed mm-hmm. every single play, played a lot of man pressure outside. And Chuck, you know, thought that we were missing out on, you know, some defensive linemen, on John Abraham mainly. So we had to try to do something to keep, you know, pressure on offense. And so he brought in a 3-3-5, and we were undersized defensive line. But we had, you know, the skill guys were athletic enough to get the job done. So, you know, everything pretty much was doing was new to anybody that we had played. So there's the New Mexico State game where, you know, won that game, broke the streak, lose the streak of 21 games, I believe.
Right. Yep. Right.
And, you know, the
and then no chance against Georgia the next week, right?
No
chance. Yeah, yeah. No chance. I remember specifically. So the goalposts came down in the New Mexico State game, and then no chance against Georgia. They're like top 10 in the nation. Quincy Carter is held top one of the top 5 Heisman Trophy candidates, and we just bashed their heads in, and they had not a clue what was going on the whole game. We kept them off balance on offense and on defense. Derek Watson had a breakout game. My boy Dennis Quinn, I think he had 2 interceptions. We just didn't have it. They never stood a chance. And I don't remember. I don't think they even rebounded up after that game. They had a pretty rough season that year. And you know what I mean? He got fired after that. And from there on, that gave us a lot of good motivation to go into the rest of the season and complete it. You know, with an Outback Bowl win and, you know, finish 8-4. So
right.
Yep.
It was a great. Great, magical turnaround. Seems magical to everybody else, but, you know, we knew deep down inside that we worked for it, and, you know, Holtz convinced us that we could play with, you know, these guys in the SEC, and I believe in every game, you know, first half, we were in it. Especially even Florida, we went down there, and I don't know if people remember, but we jumped up on those guys 21-0.
We remember.
Yeah. Well, that was the Rashad Faison game, right?
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah, he dropped a pick.
Yes, he did.
It was up 28-0, maybe.
Remember that?
But, right, man.
Well, Jonathan, let me ask you, because, and this is T-Bone, I've always been interested about that 0-11 season and then moving into that 8-4 season. You know, not that you want to dwell on it, and you've kind of touched on this, mm-hmm. but how did y'all hold it together in that 0-11 season? I mean, the fan base was losing it. And I'm just curious how y'all were able to stick together like that.
Well, off the field, you know, we were a really, really tight-knit group. We did everything together. We hung out together. We even got in a fight together. I mean, we did everything together, and that's pretty much what held us together, man. And I was injured that season, and if you're injured, you're not allowed to, you know, be on the sidelines and stuff like that. So I went to a lot of Furman games because my brother played for Furman that year, and I actually got to watch them beat up on Georgia Southern that year, and I think they won the Southern Conference Championship that season. So I spent most of my time up in Greenville watching those games, and I only went to one game, the Clemson game. Game in which they carried Brass caught off the field after the game. Both teams were pretty dismal that year, and it was an ugly game all around. And I mean, it was a tough season, but like I said, off the field we were a very tight knit group, and we didn't lose any key players to, you know, injury or any attrition. The guys going to different school, any guys that made a difference. We pretty much kept the guys, the core group, the guys that would help us win, you know, the Outback Bowls and those eight and four, 9-3. Mm-hmm, we kept that group together, and that's pretty much the story behind.
Then moving on to the next year, you know, kind of follow up that question. When did you know? I mean, every off season, every team always thinks, "Oh man, we got it together this year. We're good this year." But when did you know? Wait, this is going to be a special year.
I believe there was a point where we were 6-0 and number 9 in the nation going up against Arkansas. And we dropped a close game versus Arkansas. We win that game, guys, and we're maybe number 6 in the nation. I think we're headed down to – or headed – Tennessee may have been coming to us that year. I can't remember, but we were in every single game that year once again, even – up until the Florida game, we were in it. We were in the SEC East. You know, of course, Spurrier put it on us in that blackout, but we were in it. And, athletically, we still might have been, we still probably didn't match up to most of the, you know, the heavyweights. So, you know, Florida was the heavyweight in the SEC back then. I mean, there was no LSU, there was no Bama. You know, Georgia was, you know, I was Mark Richt's first year, so it was Florida and maybe, you know, a little bit of Tennessee. Tennessee was starting to, you know, falter at that point too. But Florida was a big dog in the SEC, and, you know, they were on a whole other level. They're pretty much on the level that Florida State's on right now, or what Bama's on. They're on that level. So for us to even think we could have a chance, you know, against Florida, and that we're in running for the ACCs with Florida, I mean, that's a big time right there. So we felt like we had turned the corner. Maybe we lacked the athleticism that all the other teams had, but you know, we weren't trying to hear that. We felt like we were good enough to play against anybody in the SEC.
Yeah, well, definitely, you know, the teams that you were on were built around defense and Charlie Strong. And going back to that Georgia game, you know, whenever he implemented that zone blitz, as a fan, you would have thought he reinvented the game of football. I mean, when we saw defensive linemen dropping into coverage and guys coming from the spur position and coming from the corner position, what was it like to play for Charlie Strong? He's got a head coaching job, and he may get a better one coming up here soon. But what kind of guy was he to play for?
He's a player's coach. He's a guy that would get his players to play for him. Great motivator, and he, you know, his guys are going to want to go play for him, but just because, you know, his demeanor and how, you know, fired up he gets, you know, in meetings and during the game. And then his play calling was always I think we had pretty good athletes on our team, so we made it easy for him to call, you know, whatever he wanted to call it. And, you know, our defense kept us in a lot of games, minus, you know, the two floors. And when I think about all the games we played and the games we won and lost, you know, our defense gave us a chance every game except for, you know, the Florida games. And that's only two games, you know, out of those, you know, two seasons, two magical seasons. And then, you know, my senior year, just all different story. A lot was going on my senior year.
Right. So, Jonathan, we got a big game coming up on Saturday against Clemson. You know, going back to the days when you played in the Clemson rivalry, you know, we'll just take 98 and 99 and throw it out the window. 2000 was the game. We had it in our back, had it in our back pocket in the push off. That's right. Now, you know, you guys were probably on the sideline. I'm sure you weren't celebrating yet, but you had to be feeling pretty good. Were you? Well, let me ask you: were you on the field when the push off happened?
No, I was not on the field.
Yeah. But did you get a good look at it?
Oh yeah, I mean everybody on the sideline saw the arm, saw the twist, and we saw the catch. And we watched. It was Andre Goodman, who ended up being a second round draft pick, third round draft pick, played for 10 years. And we watched a guy who we just called him, go get him. He run with anybody on the field. We didn't know what he ran in the 40, but he could run with anybody.
Right.
And what that person ran, and not many people beat Andre. Deep, especially. He was a good defender of the deep ball. So when you see a play like that happening, Bray is on the guy, and all of a sudden he's not. You know, we're like, well, Russ gonna call. He's gonna put that flag. Everybody saw the push up. Russ gonna call that, and he didn't make the call. So
especially since they'd been calling in that game, they'd been throwing flags left and right, offensive interference, defensive interference.
Yeah.
Yep. And all of a sudden he just had to hold that one. So you know, it was maybe a home, you know, a home call, a home for the next guy, I don't know, but whoever that ref was definitely missed that call. But, I mean, offensive pass interference, they you're not going to get that call. I mean, especially in that situation, you're not going to get an offensive pass interference call. I see it all the time these days, and, you know, I see guys miss it all the time.
Still hurts, though. Still hurts.
Yeah, it is. It always hurt. I could have been 2-2 against.
Right.
Well, you know, we were thinking when I found out we were going to be talking to you tonight. I thought back to the years that you played, and I said, well, you know, at least Jonathan got that one, because there's already been one senior class of Clemson players that never experienced a victory over South Carolina, and on Saturday there might be another senior class that comes through. So I'm sure that one win's gotta mean a lot to you. You wouldn't want to get shut out.
No, you don't want to be the class known as the class that didn't beat Clemson ever. So I'm happy I can say that I ain't one of those people. And happy to say that Clemson has a class that had never beat Carolina, so I'm fine with that.
So we're going to ask you a couple of quick questions, and then kind of get your thoughts on what's going to happen on Saturday. Who's the best offensive player you ever played against?
Probably Jabbar Gaffney.
Really?
Yeah, I got him.
Florida.
Former Florida wide receiver.
He was pretty nasty. He did whatever he wanted to our defense, and he was just a ridiculous guy.
Yeah.
What about toughest stadium you ever played in?
LSU at night was pretty wild. But that Arkansas game, I don't know if I was Little Rock or Fayetteville, but that place only held 45,000.
It was warm. Yeah, it was War Memorial.
It's Little Rock. It was Little Rock. I remember that because I think Houston Nutt always wanted to play Lou Holtz in Little Rock because they had some kind of winning streak going there or something like that.
They keep it going, man.
Yeah.
So that's probably the toughest place I ever had to play in. I mean, LSU's the obvious, you know, order, you know, the swamp. But that Little Rock Stadium, Memorial, whatever it's called, it was electric. Them fans were on top of us, and we really couldn't hear much. I do remember that.
Yeah. How about the best defender you ever played with? The best Gamecock defender you ever played with? And for those of you out there listening, don't get your feelings hurt. We're making him pick somebody.
Making me pick somebody, man. I'm going to go with a less obvious choice, and I'm going to say Dante Robinson.
I'm gonna say
Dante, because I watched him play my position with me as a spur, and you know, had Dante not hated the position so much, and you know, he learned exactly what to do, when to do it. Dante would have been playing with me. He was a playmaker.
Right.
He'd hit you at 175. He would hit you. He was fast, and he was just a playmaker. So him playing spur, you know, definitely made him a lot more tough corner.
Right.
From the time on until now, he's in the league.
What about this favorite Lou Holtz story? What's your favorite memory of the Coach Holtz?
Oh man, I was a searchlight on the punt team, and we're in a routine practice on, I believe it's Wednesday. So we do our backup punt, we do two regular punts, and then we do down the ball inside the red zone punt. So Tyler Dean makes the kick, is way up there, is high. And Coach Holtz, he likes to stand on the field, he likes to stand on the field sometimes. And he's in there, for whatever reason, he's in the field of play. And I kind of noticed it before the play, and then I was like, all right, well, I see Coach over there. He wasn't like on the sideline, or he was like between the numbers and the hash. He's on the field.
Right.
So Dean, he nails it. It's sky high. I'm going to look for it. And I see where Holtz is, and I see where the ball is going. So I'm headed kind of that way. And I'm figuring, Coach sees me, he's going to get out of the way. So before I look for the ball again, I make sure he's moving. He's still there. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to track the ball out, and hopefully he'll move. I'm thinking he sees me, but I'm guessing he was looking at the ball himself, but wasn't watching me. So as I'm going, right before I hit the ball, I crashed right into Coach Holtz, and I'm like, wow. And, I mean, it wasn't like a little passing, brush. I mean, I collided, like my shoulder pads. Anyway, I don't know if they hit him in the mouth or the face or hit him on the side, but I caught him really, really good, and he kind of just flew down and flew on his back, and I just remember looking, he's like rolling over trying to get up and putting his glasses back on, and he's more so trying to play it all. Like, I'm fine. I'm like, oh man, are you okay, Coach? I kept asking, are you okay? I was looking to make sure he wasn't mad.
Right.
He seemed like he was fine. I was making sure he wasn't pissed at me. So I was just making sure that he wasn't mad. I figured he was all right, but he wasn't mad.
Hey, Jonathan, I'm gonna fast forward from the Lou Holtz days to the present. And get your impressions on the growth of the this year's defense. You know, the beginning of the year, everybody was talking about how the defense was going to be our weakness. And, lo and behold, we're now third in the SEC in total defense, and defense has kind of won some games for us here late in the year. And then secondly, I want to know generally what your impressions are for Saturday. How do you see the game? What do you think our strengths are? What do you think we have to do to beat the Tigers five times in a row?
Defense, they've got a lot better. We lost a lot of leaders on defense. And that's the key thing. We lost a lot of leaders. Anytime you're losing leaders, like guys that get everybody lined up and guys that, corral everybody when things are going bad or, keep things going when things are going good. We lost a lot of our battlers, and I think, Victor Hedden, he stepped up, and he's making, not only is he making plays, but he seems to be that guy that's getting everybody hyped up and keeping everybody in the game, keeping everybody excited. What really scares you is the linebacking core. The guys are still, they're very young, and it's hard to take, some freshmen, or redshirt freshmen, or guys that have been moved from another position. It's hard to just take them and put them in an inside linebacker. That is a whole another beast, guys. I mean, you got to read a lot. You got to know what's going on. And you got to be able to know how to play that position. You just can't expect the guy to just, boom, be there and make plays unless he's just one of those, blue-chip athletes that's just sideline to sideline freak like Ray Lewis. And definitely, the defensive line, they're definitely solid. They probably haven't played as well as everybody would have liked for them to play this year, but they've been getting the job done. And as a defensive coordinator, you want those guys to keep the offensive line off your immature young linebackers. So hopefully they'll wreak enough havoc this Saturday that we won't have to worry about stopping the run. Now, I will say what scared me was the Wildcat run that Florida kept running and we didn't have an answer for. I guarantee you Chad Morris stated that thing up. He's got some stuff that he's going to run right at us up the middle.
What do you think?
This Saturday?
Yeah.
we're the better team, but I believe that it, you know, we can run the ball. We got the SEC second leader rusher. We've got a solid O line that can open up the holes and keep the defensive line, you know, and blitzers off the off our quarterbacks. We got speedy receivers that can make a play on any from any part of the field. On offense, on defense, I think we're their offensive line isn't as strong as our offensive line is, and our defensive line should be able to handle these guys and put pressure on Taj. Now their receivers are darn good. Right. They got some big guys and some big guys that can run, which you know would have made me nervous. Next season made me nervous watching Clemson play and then watching our secondary play, but. Like I said, as of late, our guys are playing a lot better. And you know, they played some pretty good receivers. They played tough against Missouri. Those guys are huge. Those guys can run. So
right.
I thought our guys did a pretty good job defending those guys. So I feel a little bit more confident in our ability to shut their receivers down or keep them cornered at least and not let them make the big play because that's what they thrive on is that big play. Having said all that, there's an X factor in this game, and the X factor is Taj Boyd and him going 0-4 against Carolina.
Right.
Now, I just look at how the past 12 months played out for him. Had a great game, Chick-fil-A game showing against a tough LSU team, a tough LSU defense, and he came out, you know, he was firing, he was throwing the ball, getting the ball out of his hand, he ran the ball, he was aggressive, and he played fierce. And first game against Georgia, he played the same way. He played fierce and aggressive against an SEC defense. So they showed that they can play against an SEC team. They're going to come with a whole new a different type of focus. Just watching their game plan, they've been getting the quick ball off really, really good. And I don't know if we defended the quick pass as well as we can, but when you can quick pass a team, and it negates the pass rush. So they're thinking about the seven sacks is in the back of their head, so they're going to call a lot of quick things, a lot of screens, a lot of quarterback runs, and a lot of one-step, three-step drop plays where the quarterback is looking, making one read. He's getting that ball out of his hand, hoping that his receivers can make a play on the ball and break a few tackles and go deep. So that's the X factor. Him and Sammy Watkins, they haven't really played against Carolina well at all, so I think those two guys, they know it, and they've been told that all week. If I'm one of their coaches, any of their coaches, I'm telling them all week, man, you guys are afraid of Carolina. You haven't done anything against them yet. So they've had all this kind of talk all week, and I'm pretty sure they're going to show up ready to prove that they can hang with Carolina finally. And it's going to be it's going to be a very tough game. I think it's going to be one of those 3-point, down to the wire type games. And I'll be surprised if the defense is able to get the Taj a whole lot. Not because we're not we're not able to, but because I feel like Chad and Dabo are going to dial up some plays. They're going to get Taj time, or maybe not time, but not put him in danger of getting sacked because he's not good when he's getting hit. He saw against the Florida State game. He saw against Carolina last year. He gets hit. He has pressure. Even Boston College got to him a little bit. I watched some of that game, and he's not a comfortable kid. And people are in his face and flashing by him. So
right.
I believe we're going to bring a lot of pressure, but they're going to have to do something to counter, and they've shown the ability to be able to counter an offensive line that doesn't block very well.
Well, I wish we could suit you up at the spur position and you could go out and make 12 or 15 tackles for us on Saturday night, but we'll have to go with what we got, I guess.
I might give you one and a half plays.
You might
and then
jump,
I gotta tap out, man.
You might jump on the pile at the end of a play or something like that, right?
There you go. That's probably about it, man.
Well, Jonathan, it's an honor to have you on the show, and we appreciate you joining us, giving us your insight. It's been great talking to you, and hopefully we can get you on the show again sometime.
Man, you guys called me anytime. This was fun. Like as you can see, I love talking football, sports in general, and I think I got some good insight. So you guys, anything you want to talk about, man, do NFL, college, high high school, whatever.
We've had Kerry Rich on. Maybe we can get you and Kerry on together to talk some basketball. We'll see That's how fine. You stack up to him.
Yeah,
I ain't gonna second against him, man.
He's pretty good.
Maybe I learn something from him, and he'll challenge me, and then I'll try to go out there and start studying some basketball.
Right, yeah. Jonathan, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Jonathan Thanks, Martin, former Gamecock great. And we'll be back shortly. It's your time. It's your day. It's your time. All right. Once again, thanks, Jonathan Martin, for joining us to talk a little bit about some of the old Lou Holtz days. And helping us preview the Clemson game. So let's talk a little bit more about this Clemson game coming up. I have no real feel for what's going to happen Saturday night. I almost feel like we're asking for too much to ask for five in a row, which I understand is a ridiculous thing to say, but it's like this run has almost been too good to be true, and you know it's got to come to an end someday. But after listening to, and we talked a little bit about this before we actually started recording, after listening to Dabo today, it almost sounds like he's preparing his fan base to lose this game, or maybe preparing himself to lose this game. You know, talking about things like, I don't get, you know, my joy in life doesn't come from football. Wouldn't that... If you're a Clemson fan, wouldn't that piss you off a little bit? It's like we're paying you a lot of money to get joy out of winning football games.
Well, it's pretty early to be doing the backfill, but he's really reflecting the fan base. The Clemson, you can't make air quotes. You can't do an asterisk by hand signals, can you?
No.
Maybe every time I say Clemson, I'll just pause and the listeners can imagine an asterisk after.
Right.
But whenever... Whenever the Clemson fan base receives their marching orders from their head coach or whoever, they really close ranks pretty tightly. And the way that he was acting today is the way that the Clemson fan base has been acting. Very respectful, very excited about the rivalry, very complimentary of our players. And you can just tell that if they do win on Saturday, they're going to be doing the funky chicken all over everything they've said the past couple of weeks.
Right.
They're coiled tight like a spring, ready to pounce. And I hope their players are that way. I really do. But I again, like you say, have very little idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, and it hit me today, the incredible pressure that Taj Boyd and Jonathan Martin talked about this a little bit, the incredible pressure he's going to be under on Saturday night. Because he is, you know, a lot of people are talking about him as the greatest quarterback in Clemson history.
Mm-hmm.
How can the greatest quarterback in Clemson history go 0-4 against South Carolina? I mean, that would be such a scarlet letter on the career of Taj Boyd if he couldn't beat South Carolina at least once. You know,
and
at
that's
least
really
once.
One way to look at the game is in terms of pressure at the two quarterback positions. And you've got Taj, who is really staring down the barrel of that 0-4 record with all that pressure on him and all those fan base expectations. And then on the other side, you've got Connor, who has, I think, zero pressure on him this Saturday. I mean, he's already secured his place in the Pantheon. He's won more games than anybody else. He's feeling healthy. He's, you know, waiting really on a different game to happen, not even the game on the field, in order to determine, you know, where we play next maybe.
Yeah.
And I just think he's going to go out there and sling it. I hope that he's going to go out there and just feel the support of all the fans behind him and play the game of his life.
Yeah. Well, G-Man, you'll be there. What you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to the atmosphere and all of what you guys said, but I want to talk about nuts and bolts a little bit. And I still feel like the game...
You see what he just did there? Everything y'all said was stupid. Now let's talk about the real.
Let's talk about real football.
I wasn't going to go that far, but let's think about why we have won the ball games these last 4 years, and it's the lines of scrimmage. And I've been sitting here thinking the last week or so, trying to figure out in my mind if things are different or the same. along the lines of scrimmage, looking at this year's matchup compared to the last four matchups. And I just can't figure out any discernible major difference. I mean, I think Clemson's better on the defensive line than they have been.
Than they
have been in the past. They're better. But we're pretty doggone good on both defense and offense at a line of scrimmage. And that's where the ball game, in most ball games, are won, right there in the trenches. So I'm feeling pretty good about it from the standpoint of hanging in the game. I think we're going to be able to block them for the most part, and I think we're going to be able to control the run. And we know, as Jonathan alluded to, it's trying to make the other team one-dimensional, and I think we have a better chance of doing that to them than they do to us. But that's just my meager opinion.
Yeah.
You could factor into that if you want to, because I agree with what you're saying. I think the only discernible difference is a slight improvement on the Clemson D-line. But I think maybe our offensive line's improved, so maybe that's a push. The other thing, though, is special teams. You know, what kind of field position is this game going to be played at? Is it going to be like the Tennessee game where we're just in a hole, in a hole, in a hole, or not? And so I keep thinking about their kicking game. I think it's pretty solid.
Right. Yeah, yeah, definitely their place kicking. I don't know much about their punter, but yeah, I they would probably have a slight edge in kicking. I'm not sure about their coverage and return teams. I don't know that they've done anything particularly spectacular this year. But I don't think they've been as horrendous as we have been either. So probably give them the advantage in special teams.
Well, it's also going to be about controlling the big play. You know, I keep thinking back to the Central Florida game when we had those just horrific busts in the secondary two or three times with these long plays. We've been fortunate, really, not to have that happen again, aside from maybe the Tennessee play. That really wasn't horrible coverage. That was just a miracle throw, a miracle catch. But the controlling the big play, and that means, I think, the catch and runs by Watkins, you know, on the slants and the screens, that's going to be real key to the game. And because I think Jonathan was right, they're going to come out and throw a lot of quick passes and have Todd running the ball. They're not going to do much to allow us to get pressure. I think they've learned their lesson. Last couple of years, sitting back and letting Clowney and the other guys run free and sack Taj.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the other things that concerns me a little bit about the game is the inconsistency of our offense. You know, there have been times this year where we have looked completely unstoppable and where we've said, man, we've been waiting for this Steve Spurrier offense, you know, since 2005. This is the offense we've been waiting for. And then we'll just hit these long patches where we can't do anything right. You know, the Tennessee game, the Mississippi State game, where we had just multiple three and outs in a row, we can't hit a stretch like that on Saturday night. You know, we can have a three and out here or there, but I feel like we got to have, you know, something like the Georgia game last year. I'm not saying we got to beat them by four touchdowns, but I think the play calling and the way we moved the ball against Georgia, and we just picked up first down after first down after first down, I think that's the way our offense is gonna have to play. And that sounds so obvious. We're gonna have to make first downs and score points. But seriously, our offense has been just kind of scattershot, it seems like, in games this year where you just didn't have confidence we were going to be able to pick up 5 yards. But I think we'll be okay. I think Mike Davis will be rested and healthy. As you said before, T-Bone, Connor Shaw looked as good as he's looked all season against Coastal the other day. So hopefully he'll be able to run around and make some plays with his legs. Shaq Rowland has emerged the last couple of ball games. Just a solid group of wide receivers. And I think it's going to be eliminating the big play by Clemson too, and stopping that zone read.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
We've had trouble with the quarterbacks running the ball, and we got to be able to put Taj on his backside more than once.
Yep, I think that's important. Other thing that I would like to predict based on the little bit of Clemson that I've seen this year, a little bit of their defense, is there is going to be the opportunity for our tight ends to make some plays on Saturday. So I would love to see Trell Adams and 81, whatever the freak his name is. I'd like to see them doing well.
Busta Anderson.
Yeah, Busta.
I think, I don't know why, but I just have a hunch that Ellington's going to have a big game. I mean, he tends to show up against them. I mean, think about the catch in the game here 2 years ago, and then, of course, the touchdown last year. He seems to come up big in big games, and he'll disappear for stretches and maybe an entire game. But he's a money player, and I think we're going to see I think you're going to see him targeted. He's a veteran. He knows what this game means, and I think you're going to see his number called, and he's going to have to produce, and of course, he's always produced when needed. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a tough one. I think we have to come out and hit them in the mouth early and see if they can withstand it. I don't want to get behind by a couple scores and try to come back. I think we're going to need to be in the lead or be close the whole game to win it.
Well, it's going to be a big Saturday. We got Auburn, Alabama at 3:30, Georgia, Georgia Tech at 3:30. We're at 7, and then the other one that we will have an eye on is Texas A&M at Missouri. And I told somebody at work, it's kind of like in baseball in a best-of-7 series, when your team gets up 3-1, you're kind of thinking, oh, man, we got a couple of games to play with, you know? And that's kind of how I felt about Missouri, you know, having two games that they could potentially lose. It's like, oh, man, if they lose to Ole Miss, that's okay because Texas A&M's going to get them anyway. They're going to lose one of those two. And I went into last Saturday with like 80% confidence that we were going to be the SEC East champs. Now I'm down to like 5. I've almost resigned myself to Missouri beating Texas A&M Saturday
night. You watched Ole Miss being just completely incapable of doing anything with power. You know, it was all to the side. And then you watched LSU just kind of, you know, flick Texas A&M off of them and out physical them.
Right. Remember this. That's the first road game they have lost, they being Texas A&M, since Manziel was the quarterback. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Well, since they've been in the SEC. Yeah.
The first one. So,
well, let's hope they don't have the second one in them.
Right. But I'm saying they're pretty good on the road, and you rarely see him play bad twice in a row. And I heard he had a thumb injury or something. They are very good on offense. LSU just had their number. Now, they're terrible on defense. So I think we're going to be looking at a 45-42, 48-45 type of ball game. But Franklin is the kind of guy who can make the big mistake. So I think there's a chance. I think it's probably going to be a Missouri win, but I think A&M's got a shot.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got some seniors walking. I think we got a grand total of 5 seniors walking on Saturday, including Connor Shaw. And if you haven't had a chance to read the blog post about Connor Shaw I wrote, I tell you, as I was writing that, I've kind of debated in my head whether or not Connor Shaw is the best quarterback in South Carolina history. And as I was writing that and as I was thinking about it, there's so much, and you guys will understand this, there's so much evidence in his favor to being the greatest quarterback in the history of South Carolina football. Nobody is really even close, because Todd Ellis threw a lot of interceptions. I think he threw more interceptions than touchdowns. Steve Tannehill threw for a lot of touchdowns, but he didn't win a lot of games. Jeff Grant's didn't have the statistics, won an average number of games. Steven Garcia took us to our first SEC East championship, but that's about the only criteria that he has to even put him in the mix. So
could you make an argument for Tommy Suggs? I mean, am I getting my years wrong? He won a conference championship and he beat Clemson 3 straight years.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly could. But he didn't have as many wins as Shaw and probably didn't have the statistics, but nobody back in those days had the type of statistics that quarterbacks are putting up these days. Suggs is probably up there closer than some of these other guys that we commonly mention as the best quarterback in Gamecock history. So anyway, going to be sad to see him suiting up at Williams-Brice for the last time. Looks like Clowney is going to walk with the seniors. I think Quarles is going to walk with the seniors. Hampton is undecided, but either way, I would be surprised if he's not gone when all is said and done. So, which makes you kind of optimistic for next year too. But we won't start talking about that yet. We got got some other business to take care of, don't we? All right. Well, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. You guys got any additional thoughts you want to throw out there before? Can you believe it's football season? Weren't we just playing North Carolina?
This has been a world record quick one. This one went by in a flash.
Yeah, yeah. It's just been crazy. Oh yeah, shoot, the Horsecocks.
Horsecock up there.
They had a big win. They were very active on Twitter over the weekend. They beat South Dakota State 14-5 in the fall finale.
So the Horsecocks pounded them.
They did. That's a phrasing you could use. So anyway, the equestrian team wins. So for G-Man and for T-Bone, happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Hope you have a great time with your family. And we look forward to tweeting with you on Saturday. G-Man, you'll be at the game, I assume?
I'll be there.
I will be torturing myself watching it on television. I'll be rubbing my hands and biting my nails. And
I'm going to be hiding under the bed.
You'll be will you be in your regular spot in the room off to the side without any family around? That's probably
exactly.
A good idea. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, all right. I hope this isn't the last time we get to use this sign off, but just so you're all aware, as of this taping, it has now been 1,824 days since South Carolina lost to Clemson in football. I hope we're able to extend that after Saturday. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll be talking to you after we beat Clemson on Saturday night. Go Cox.
That's right.
Hello, Gamecock Nation, and welcome to TRC Unleashed. This is episode number 59. I am Buck, and I am joined by T-Man... T-Man and G-Bone.
He just called you T-Bag.
I'm going to put that on the blooper reel at the end. All right.
Put that on the Todd Ellis rule.
All right, let me try that again.